You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
The Labour Party has changed into a party of toolmakers.
We will strive for the denazification of Ukraine.
Let me put it to you.
Can't grow concrete.
Yes, Joe Biden's an alien. Oh, everybody knows
the phone went over the side.
Under the EU, we weren't allowed to be
Christ. I just think everyone should be sure.
What the fuck is going on?
Hello, I'm Mark Steele. Welcome to my podcast, where each week I ask the question, what the fuck is going on?
What the fuck is going on?
Sometimes people on the left can be magnificent without realising it. One of my favourite ever arguments was when someone I heard from the group called The Militant said he thought socialism was inevitable. And someone said to him, well, it's not inevitable, is it? There might be a nuclear war. And he went, well, that'd just be a setback. But worse than that are the ones who are determined to be eternally negative about every outcome because it hasn't solved everything. So I've had quite a few people expressing disgust at me over the last week for showing any pleasure at all at the result of the election. Robert Reed, one of our Patreon supporters, has obviously come across this as well. He's written to say, what the fuck is wrong with some people? We finally kicked the Tories out and within an hour, some bloody miserable high-profile lefties are straight away saying nothing's changed. In fact, it's going to get worse. I've waited 14 years for this, for fuck's sake. Enjoy it for a few weeks. I agree, Robert, because to accept that something isn't perfect doesn't mean that everything is the same, does it? Something can be better than something else. If a population votes for someone who claims to understand your life, although they're richer than the king, or if they vote for someone who goes, I was at the party but wasn't at the party because I was in New Zealand, although I've never been to New Zealand, it is you who was at the party, curriculum vitae, carpe diem, and they get voted in because they must be clever because they've spoke Latin, that is more annoying than if it didn't happen. If someone screams all day, they're going to stop the boats by sending everyone who comes on them to Rwanda. But the people who say they won't do that beat them in an election. That's good, isn't it? As long as you're one of the people that doesn't think everyone who arrives on a dinghy should be sent to Rwanda. I've had lots of messages saying, how can you be happy that Keir Starmer won after all he's done? And the answer is, because he's better than the other one that could have won. Just as I'd rather be on an EasyJet plane that charged £9 for a beer and landed 60 miles from where I was going, than be on a plane that exploded in a fucking fireball. That doesn't mean I support the practice of charging £9 for a beer, does it? It just means one option is better than the other. But mostly, as Robert says, can you not be at least partly happy for just a moment? Some people on the left think that it's a historic betrayal to show the tiniest fragment of happiness at any time. How can you smile when the landless labourers of Mexico have had their strawberries contaminated by centipedes who were put there by the petrochemical industry? Because it is your historic duty to be eternally miserable, which is why the best thing these people can do for the cause of the masses is to join the Reform Party and make them fucking miserable instead. One of the saddest results of the recent election was the inexplicable defeat of Liz Truss. And to understand this shocking result, we're lucky enough to have with us Liz Truss herself to explain what happened.
Last week, I'm proud to say that I achieved one of the most remarkable results in election history. The number of people voting for me went down by over 24,000, which is one of the biggest numbers ever seen. And that's not just in politics. I'm told it was the largest drop in anything ever, apart from when people's pension funds fell in October 2022 for no particular reason. I may no longer be the MP for wherever it was I was MP for, but you certainly haven't seen the last of me. I've already joined the Popular Conservatives, a group featuring myself, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and lots of other extremely popular MPs who all lost their seats, but only thanks to the woke coalition of Angela Rayner, Gareth Southgate, Kylian Mbappe, the whole of France, and Laura Kunzberg, who helped Labour win by reading out the results on election night. I am proud of my record over these past years, during which I won a number of awards, including Worst Loser, Least Self-Aware Politician, and Most Disastrous Prime Minister of All Time. But if anyone thinks that I'm finished, think again. My political comeback is already underway. I am delighted to say that I've just had a call from the Democrats asking if I'd like to take over from Joe Biden.
It is not possible to work out what the fuck is going on without expert advice. On a week when France has been in the news for many, many, many important reasons, you need expert French advice. And we are so lucky to have with us Christine Berrou.
Oh, I'm lucky. I'm so nervous and so flattered you're having me on your podcast. And I hope I am speaking English well enough to... to give you some...
speak English far better than all the guests we have on normally.
No, it's false because I listened to some of your podcasts and it was brilliant. And so I am really nervous right now.
Don't be nervous. I don't know. What is my first question? What do you think would be the... when I've tried to say what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Qu'est-ce que le Nike se passera? I don't know. What would it be? Or would it... wouldn't be Nike, would it? It'd be more like biz. I don't know.
It's a really powerful sentence, what the fuck is going on. And I think you can really translate it in French. Because even in France, we say what the fuck. We stole this from to you. So, yeah.
So, what the fuck surpass?
Yes, what the fuck surpass? Exactly. That's perfect.
Now, we've had an election here 1 week ago, which was extraordinary in many ways. And the main sentiment afterwards was relief. I was talking to a Labour Party member on Saturday night who agreed with me that it was relief rather than jubilation. And I know that the word that I've seen most commonly about the elections in France from people is soulagement. So, which is, it's sort of stronger than relief, I think, in England, but it's a sort of extreme soulagement, but it's a sort of huge relief. Is that what it feels like?
Yes, we are relieved, but we mustn't forget that far left, right, far right almost won. That's the truth. And now we have more deputies from the far right wings than 1 month ago. So it's a bitter, we are happy, but we are scared too, because maybe this is not the end. You know, in 3 years, we have to change our president, and Marine Le Pen from the far right is really popular in France. We saved the face for the moment, but how long can we, fight for our rights? It was hard, but we have to keep hope. But I'm scared, really. I'm sorry because I know this is a funny podcast.
I think this is important because that's why soulagement is the right word, isn't it? So it's a sort of it's more a more common word than relief, I think.
So close to leave the country to people who doesn't really like people.
It does mean that there's a bit of space, I think, more than people imagine. Because did you think Marine Le Pen would would win, and that what's her name, the 28-year-old, Jordan, what's his name, Jordan
Bardella,
Jordan Bardella, he would become the Premier Minister in France.
It was so close, and the main issue with Jordan Bardella, he doesn't know what he is talking about. This is the main criticisms about him. You know, he's handsome, he had beautiful costumes, but when he talks, there is nothing. It's blah 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 blah. So
he's very much like Nigel Farage, except for the handsome bit. We have someone here who's So, but now there is this. I don't know if this is the same in France, but there is a little film that lots of people have seen, and it's the last 5 seconds before the exit poll. How would you say that in French? Whether is it exit poll, the poll, les sondages, le dernier sondage, avant 20h, l'élection est finie. So, and it's Rassemblement National, the party of Marine Le Pen, and it's their big party, and they're all watching the clock, waiting for the poll, and they're all excited. They think any second now we're going to win the election. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then it comes up, and their faces—it's beautiful. Their faces sort of change, like, as if like a wonderful actor was having to express this disappointment.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah,
it's wonderful, isn't it?
Look at it again and again and again. And when I feel depressed, I will watch to this video to wish better.
and there was lots of which we didn't have here for this election. Lots of scenes of young people in Paris, in the, I think, La République, I can't remember, but lots, and in lots of squares, Lyon, and watching this as if it's a football match on a big screen. And then young people who were very much against Le Pen all cheering.
Yeah, it was a big moment. It was, but you know, I'm sure we will have to fight again in and then in 5 years. That's why I want to celebrate. It's like football. I want to celebrate. But I told to myself, for who my daughter, who is 6, will have to fight for herself in, you know, when she will have the age to vote. You know, it's never finished. And what I see is that Marine Le Pen is more and more and more popular. And I think it's a problem of, you know, in my opinion, Macron took away money from school, and we don't have teachers anymore. We don't have, you know, public services is a mess, and people felt isolated and not understood. And that's why they vote for Marine Le Pen. And it's not finished until we have to change our president. And I hope to have a president for the left, from the left wing. In my opinion, that's the only solution to take away from this nightmare.
So most people in Britain won't know this. So there's the elections for president. They were 2 years ago. And Macron won, but Marine Le Pen won 42% of the vote. Marine Le Pen is probably like Nigel Farage in this country, probably even more nasty, I would think. Like, so she was going to bring in, she was going to make it illegal to have a job in a government job if you were not a French national. Is that right?
I think it wasn't Marine Le Pen herself, but it was one of team member. But yeah, but you know, it's a stupid thing. They say stupid thing every day. So
yeah.
How can we know that this is real? not real. And maybe you saw that, but when Jordan Bardella says something, then we ask him some details about this something, and he's unable to answer because he doesn't know, because it's just, you know, sentenced to have vote, because a lot of French people today are afraid by stranger because of some medias who tell them anything about strangers. And each time they say something to, you know, to make stranger out of the country, they vote, they are happy, that's what they want to listen to. But Marine Le Pen said that, no job for stranger, and it worked.
Absolutely. I do think that as Marine Le Pen lost, I wonder if it's possible, Christine, that she applies to become leader of the Conservative Party in Britain, because there is a vacancy.
Wow. And
I think she would win because the Conservative Party here is, the membership is very old. So that we're a bit luckier than in France, because I think a lot of young people support Marine Le Pen.
We can offer you Jordan Bardella for Christmas if you want.
No, we don't want Bardella. But I think Le Pen, because she would... I think the old people in the Conservative Party would like her. They wouldn't like her because she was French, but they would be too batshit mental to realise that. And so I think they would vote for her to be leader of the Conservative Party. And I could see that. Because our right-wing people are mostly old, whereas I think you have there's a lot of younger people that support Le Pen.
Yeah, that's a shame. And you know, I'm a comedian, and I made a lot of fun with Rassemblement National last week and the week before, and I lost a lot of followers, and I was afraid because I thought to myself, but why they were following me in the first place? And young people, you know, they love Marine Le Pen, and it's scary, really scary.
But they were fans of yours, but they were Le Pen supporters.
Yeah.
Supporters.
And I made a video about that to say, but why? Why? Because, you know, I support 2 years ago during the election, I was one of the official supporters of Sandrine Rousseau. Do you know Sandrine Rousseau? And
no.
I performed during her campaign, and I made a lot of pictures. She's an ecologist.
Okay.
So normally I shouldn't have followers from Rassemblement National. You know, it's like a vaccine. I have the French...
I think that's quite nice, though, to have followers. Oh, do you know what? I don't agree with her about whether or not we should follow the policies of the Third Reich in Germany, but she's very funny. I think that's quite sweet.
Yeah.
So the ecologists, that would be the Green, we call them the Green Party, so Le Parti Vert. Are they called Parti Vert or Parti Ecologiste?
Yeah, I was with them during the campaign for the presidential 2 years ago, and I made, you know, a comedy routine on stage during campaign, so I was really invested with them. So that's why I don't understand why Marine Le Pen support follow me.
I don't think that happened. I don't know. Maybe I do have people. Maybe I do have people who say, Mark, I think you're so funny. I don't agree with you about I don't agree with you about rounding up all foreigners and putting them in camps behind barbed wire. But we can agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the comedy in stand up in France, especially in Paris, it's huge. It's much, much bigger.
Well, but you know, we were really, you know, stand up comedy wasn't exist in Paris 20 years ago. The new things for us, and it began like a fashion. You know, a lot of young people say, "Oh, it seems hazy to do stand-up comedy, so I will try." So we had all these young people trying to do stand-up, and we have a huge population of young comedians. But I think it's the same at London in America. But for us, yes, it's kind of new.
And when did you start?
I've been doing stand-up comedy for 17 years now. So I'm a old lady on the French stage. But I've done a lot of TV and radio, but I never really exploded. How do you say? I'm not really famous in France, but that's okay. Because
connu, un peu connu.
Un peu, but you know, I had some of fame level and then I lost it because no, it's complicated because, you know, I have my big mistake. Do you want to know my big mistakes? And maybe it could be a good advice for people who are listening to.
Yes, tell us your big mistakes.
Is that I wanted to be love, and that's a huge mistake because, you know, I was hired for what I am. And then I thought that was what I am wasn't enough. So I tried to be something else, someone else. And then I spoiled a lot of opportunity because of that. And that's why, you know, well, do you know what I mean? Or is this is too
Did
intimate?
Did you punch anyone, Christine?
No, not me. No, but maybe I slept with too much people when I was young. Is that too? I know you are English, so maybe
no. That's very French. That's very French. And now everyone listening is going, oh, the French.
Yes, I know, but you know, I had this kind of. I talk about it on stage, but I was emotionally dependent. You know, I wanted to be loved. I want to be validated. And it was a big mistake. When you are an artist, it's a big mistake because you have to be independent. You know, you have to trust yourself.
And okay.
You know, yeah.
But you were on television on the panel shows. And did you, but I thought you, did you resign from a show?
I was in the morning show in France, the big morning show. That's the most important thing I've done. But I was in a troupe called the Jamel Comedy Club on TV, which is famous in France. And that's the two main things I've done. But now I am on a TV show called Piquante. It's a feminist TV show on a feminist channel called Teva.
Piquante is, how can you say piquant?
Piquante, it's like, piquante, it means like spicy, spiky. This is, it means that because we are, because we try to be, you know, spicy.
and is it on, how can you find it? Is it on?
You can find it on the website of Teva. It's a French TV, Teva, T-E-V-A. But I'm starting to perform in English now. So I have, I'm trying to perform in London now. So for your audience, they can follow me. And maybe I will be in London, I think, around November and December. I am trying to find some other gigs. But I performed at the Comedy Cabin last time, and it was really great. And English public is so, you know, polite and smart, because French people are a little bit, you know, too emotional. But people, you know, what a surprise. But English people, they listened. I don't know how to explain, but this is another kind of energy. So
we listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And and you try to understand even when you don't understand. And that's a thing. Never a French could do that.
I think we listen. I think historically, English people listen and then go, thank you very much. Now fuck off.
Okay.
But we've listened.
But no, I'm really trying to perform in English. This is my next challenge because I have so much to learn from you. Because because English people, you invented humor. You invented that. And that's an important thing for me.
People were so miserable before the English went around. That's why we set up the empire. That's why we created the empire.
Yeah.
These chaps in India look rather miserable. I think we should go over there and teach them how to laugh.
Yeah, that's the truth. Oh, you're so funny, Mark. I'm so happy to know you, Mark, because you are a huge artist. I have to tell you something. When I met you the first time, I didn't know you. And the other day, I performed at the Comedy Cabin and I talked about you to some young comedians, and they were so impressed. And they told me, oh, you met Mark Steele, but you know, he's someone here. And I was, whoa, oh my God.
I think they need to raise their bar of celebrity.
Oh, no. That's true.
Thank you so much, Christine. We'd love to have you back on here to talk about the total defeat of Marine Le Pen in 3 years' time. And, yes, well, I can send you the defeat of Liz Truss in our election. She was prime minister, and now she's even lost her local position as member of parliament in her area, and which she greeted with her normal English class. Fucking shit.
But you made a hilarious joke about her last time. You said that she killed the queen, and it was so funny.
Elle a tué la reine.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Christine. That's absolutely lovely. Now we know what the fuck's a pass.
Yes. Yeah, what the fuck's a pass? It's perfect.
One just final thing before we go, the very final thing. Can you just say fuck off again in that accent?
Fuck off?
Oh. That's magnificent.
Okay.
Magnificent. Formidable.
Okay. What the fuck is going on?
What the fuck is going on? If you would like to hear more of that interview with Christine, you can join us on Patreon, where there is an extended version available. And it is indeed thanks to our wonderful, virtuous, beatific, radiant Patreon supporters that we can continue our quest to find out what the fuck is going on in this new era. Just follow the link on our Twitter page or search for Patreon, What the F, and for as little as 2 insignificant pounds a month, you'll get early access to ad-free versions of the regular episodes. Or to find out at an advanced level, like the Thetans of East Grinstead Scientology Institute, for just £4 a month, you will get a longer, ad-free version of the episode with extended versions of the guest interviews and with extra Elliot and bonus sketches. For example, this week, there's George Galloway giving his expert advice to Gareth Southgate. All our Patreon supporters get the episodes on Friday nights, unlike everybody else who has to wait until Saturday mornings, desperately mathematically working out how they can tilt the axis of the earth to make the Saturday morning come round earlier. So search Patreon What the F to join the WTF community.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your site will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
What the fuck? What the fuck is going on?
As you know, we like to get all sorts of views on this podcast. We're not one of these people that's in those echo chambers or bubbles. So we're delighted to have with us the master of gently teasing out opinions, Mike Concrete. Right, with us next is Brigitte DuPont. She's here to talk to us about the Tour de France, and she's French, God help us. What you got to say for yourself, darling?
Well, we arrive at what is traditionally the most exciting moment in the Tour, when each day offers 2 concurrent battles, the race to maintain the yellow jersey as overall leader, but also the competition to win each individual stage. And as the peloton is full of very tired legs, it's quite a spectacle.
So what you're saying is you're trying to steal all our fish to get us back for Brexit?
I'm sorry, I am the cycling reporter from L'Équipe.
And what if I want to drive to Aix-en-Provence or wherever you are? I can't, because all your bloody bikes are in the way. It's a sign when I'm coming through Chingford.
It is a race of bikes. I think driving will be cheating a little bit, don't you agree?
So you're trying to stop motorists getting to work because you can't accept the democratic decision of the British people?
I think if you were to be one of us, the British people would be very happy.
And if cars aren't allowed in the Tour de France, why is it always won by a Lamborghini?
Mike, I think you are mistaken. Sports cars are not part of the Tour de France.
Yes, they are. See ya, Brigitte. That's enough of that, idiot. No wonder nobody came to my election night barbecue. If anyone wants 500 sausages, they're on eBay. Here's Tucker Carlson with news of roadworks on the A12.
What the fuck? What the fuck is going on? What the fuck is going on?
It has come to the time of the week where we must celebrate, we must lay before the announcements, we must serve the announcements. As people were told in ancient Rome, that one must not just live in Rome, one must pledge to serve her. And so must we with the announcements, the sentiments of modern world that keep us spinning, that keep us alive, that give us a reason to live. Constant announcements telling us which bit of the train to get off, whether or not we should be careful of being wet, or whether it might be slippier today, whether or not that we should see anything without worrying that it might not be right, and therefore contact a series of people to make sure that it gets sorted. And the first amongst the announcements is that the Mark Seals in Town series has been, well, it's been going on a while now. Here's an announcement I made that was wrong. I put on Twitter that it was the Stoke show this week and it was the East Grinstead show. I got told wrong, honestly. I wasn't doing it on purpose. There, I'll tell a wrong thing. That's how I'm going to subvert this bloody awful system. They are capitalism. Take that, eh? Now your BBC has had to put out a programme that was different from the one that the person who did the programme said it was. There you go, Laura Koonsberg. Take that. It wasn't that. I was just told it that it was wrong. But anyway, this is right now. So the one on some date or other that's next from what I'm saying here is about Stoke. And then there's one about Coleraine in Northern Ireland, marching bands, all that. And then there's one about Nether Edge, which I haven't recorded yet. So that is all available on BBC Sounds, along with the 7,500 other episodes of Mark Steele's in Town. We have now covered every house in Britain. Now, people have been getting in touch with us on our Patreon account, as well as on Twitter, wanting to know what the fuck is going on with certain things, which, after all, is their right. Paul Lengthorn, for example, on Patreon asks, Mark, did you see Rishi Sunak's speech in the Commons restart? He looked crushed and really can't do humble at all. Well, I did see it, and I thought it was a splendid work of art, and much like, you know, other bits of other things that have gone down as works of art, bits of sculpture about shit, you know, paintings about sunflowers, all that sort of stuff. So was this. Someone who was, you're quite right, unable to do humble act, but the very next day he'd recovered, as they do, and he was answering people's inquiries about finance. And somebody, for example, said, I've got a job that just doesn't pay enough to make the bills, what can I do? And he's like, I feel your pain, I really do, and I'm much in a similar situation. I had a job that was paying far less than I would have hoped to have done at my stage in life, but I didn't get down about it. I had one day of appearing to be rather forlorn, and now what I've done is I've just continued doing as I was doing before I did that job in hedge funds, and I'm remunerated considerably to a considerably greater degree than I was when I was doing my humble post as Prime Minister of the British Isles. So I suggest you do the same. Thank you very much for calling. And so he's got over it, and so should everybody else. John Ewing on Patreon says, it's so disappointing. Now, this is, I have to make an apology here, a sort of apology. John Ewing on Patreon says, it was so disappointing to find out that Emma Wall actually got a creditable 1,833 votes. Not that I have anything against whoever she is, but it would have been much funnier if it really was won. Now, this is because last week in the post-election show, I read out the results of whatever constituency Emma Wall stood in. And it was funny because she got one, but it was a mistake on the BBC website. It was actually Shappy sent it to me, and she thought it was amusing, and she was quite right. Anyway, Emma Wall didn't get one. I just loved it. Emma Wall must have been, you see what they've been saying. I got 1,833 votes, and only one of them are on the. I wonder why maybe someone at the BBC really, really has it in for Emma Wall. Maybe Emma Wall ran off with Laura Kunzberg's husband one day. And now she's, right, I'm going to see, she only got one vote. And she's lucky that I'm a little bit less cross about it than I was, because I would have said she didn't even get that. But that's probably the fucking she ran off with. I think that's what happened. And then someone said, Laura, you've got enough issues already without having it in for Emma Wall like that. We really must correct this and say she got 1,833 votes. But they wouldn't have voted for her if they'd known what she was really like. That's what I think happened. And look who's got caught up in it. I have. My fault. Anyway, I'm sorry. Stu Jenner on Patreon asks, why isn't Gareth Southgate in the cabinet? Well, I've said this many times. There should be a cabinet made up from sports people. It should be Gary Neville and Dina Asher-Smith and Judy Murray and Andy Murray and Ronnie O'Sullivan, and it'd be the most left-wing cabinet we'd ever have. We'd end up in a war with America, and Ronnie O'Sullivan would lead a legion of people fighting Donald Trump's troops with snooker cues, and we'd win. We'd be all right. But yeah, Gareth Southgate, I think Gareth Southgate could. He could be the voice of moderation in it. He could be the one that went, I think that's probably a little bit too adventurous, and at some point we should pass the ball back to Pickford. Melanie Ragnou, and as it's a bit of a French episode this week, it's very good to have someone with such a French name, a friend of the show on Patreon, says, if you were a phone-in show, I'd be relieved of France. Fuck the fascist Le Pen. That's the sort of... That's the sort of phoning this would be, wouldn't it? I'm sick of it. Fucking fascists running European countries. Quel bordel.
What the fuck is going on? What the fuck?
It is not possible to find out what the fuck is going on without listening to the advice of those who are superior intellectually and cranially on account of their youthful nature, being of an age of around 27 and 8/9, such as Elliot Steele.
Hello.
Hello. The Bertrand Russell of your generation. Do you know who he is?
No.
He wrote The History of Western Philosophy.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I can do that if I can be bothered.
That's quite a lot of his chapters say that. The chapter on Locke was, I could write anything about him, but I can't be bothered.
What was the philosophy of Locke?
Well, he was quite rational, really, which was quite courageous. He was from Edinburgh.
I was thinking of Hume, sorry.
Yeah, Hume was Edinburgh as well.
Yeah, Hume is Edinburgh. So when he said, yeah.
There you are.
I like Hume.
Do you?
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, we are meant to be irrational human beings because we have emotion. So, like, telling someone to think of something logically is not going to work because we are emotional beings, not rational beings.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm not that familiar with him, but that's, yeah. Well, that's why it's hopeless trying to argue with someone who's religious, isn't it?
Well, religious or, like, just even in the case of, like, you know, telling someone to stop gambling or telling someone, you know, anything. Oh, it's you know, yes, I know I should do something. Mm. There is a rationale and logic behind it, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
And I quite like that as a philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's quite a lot in that.
Yeah. There's a great deal in that. Bless you.
So what was Locke thinking?
Well, Locke was sort of, Locke was a rational, there's a great irony with Locke. So he was a great sort of rationalist. So he was obviously at the time when mysticism dominated, the idea was that we're here because God's made us like this and so on. And he was very much in favour of thinking that there is that human beings sort of shape their own destiny and so on. Now, the great irony of this is there's a statue of him that you will have walked past several thousand times on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, just by the Rainy Halls where I've done shows. Mm. And the statue there, it's become a custom for tourists and for people who live in Edinburgh to rub his toe to bring good luck. And so many people have rubbed his toe for good luck that the toe is actually a different colour from the rest of the statue. And the poor fucker spent all his life arguing for rational thought, and now people rub his toe for good bloody luck.
There's that dog up there as well in Edinburgh. They got the statue of the dog.
Yeah, the Greyfriars Bobby that sat by his...
What did that dog have a philosophical book or something at all? Was that? I'm not quite sure what it did, but I've walked past it a lot.
That dog was mostly famous for questioning the theory that there is an immortality of the soul.
Yeah, that's a pretty clever dog. I don't know if it deserves a statue. Why does a dog have a statue?
Because he did sort of question the immortality of the soul. He was on the favour of the... He would have argued with Sir Thomas Aquinas that there was an immortality of the soul because he sat next to his master's grave every day, I believe. After his master had died, he went out there every day, probably just thinking, you've been here 3 years now, get up and fucking feed me, you lazy twat.
Mm. So that's why that's why there's a statue of that dog, because it went and sat by its master's grave.
I believe so, yeah. The Greyfriars Bobby. And there's it right up to where the Pleasance and the Gilded Balloon and all that is now. And the Assembly, you know, just there, just near there. Just between there and Hunter's Square. So that's where Greyfriars Bobby is.
Oh, but I thought he'd stopped the English or something. I must have done something fucking bit. One of our kings.
scared Edward the Second. Yeah. And it so actually, I conclude actually... that that the Scottish... fuck!
That dog scored in the 1972 Scotland side. Well, that was their best ever player, was a dog.
Yeah. One all draw against Equatorial Guinea.
Yeah, we almost qualified that year. We almost qualified. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me tell you, I've never seen a street party like it.
Some of the Scottish are still out in Equatorial Guinea. They never come home. They're loved out there. They're absolutely loved. They made it. Even though they lost all their matches.
I love it when fans do that, like the Irish do this, whenever they qualify for a tournament and they get absolutely horsed. They then go, oh, but we were fans of the tournament. And you go, yeah, because that's the real prize, isn't it? I don't give a shit if England fans are throwing deck chairs and there's women and children cowering in fear. If we win a trophy, I couldn't give a fuck how our fans behave. Well,
Let me just add that is not the view of this podcast.
I think it is the view of this podcast. I'm going to be different. I don't know what this podcast stands for, but I know it stands for that. And... A lot of people got angry at me on Twitter on this podcast because I said that England fans weren't badly behaved.
No, I think I agreed with you that they weren't badly behaved. Seeing as we were out with England fans and they were very... Yeah. Did we say the story about the blokes in the bar next to us? Did we tell that story?
Oh, what, the guy who came up and went, thank you for being so shit.
We said that. But no, there was, did we tell this story?
Oh, fuck, this is hilarious.
See, I think this was classic English working class behaviour. So we'll tell it between us. So I'll do the first bit. So we're at a bar on a very sunny day, on the day after a not entirely over-exciting 0-0 draw with Slovenia. And there was a group of lads, about seven, I would say, from Sheffield, enjoying a midday pint in the Cologne heat. And one of their lads went off to the toilet. Right, you carry on.
And then there'd been this homeless guy who was like, but kept coming up bothering everyone for change. So then when he came up and asked him for change, I went, no, mate, we can't give you any check, but we have got a pint if you want it. And then gave him their mate's pint. He went, oh, thank God.
He was such a homeless man. I've never seen a happier homeless man. And then the denouement Where's me beer? Where's me fucking ale? It's over there, mate. You fucking bastards.
It was brilliant. Honestly, that was the best thing I saw on that trip.
That's great. Now, we've had a change of government. So,
you've talked about that loads on this, I bet.
It's a change of government after 14 years of moaning about the government, going, how much more are we going to put up with this government?
How much has your life changed since the new government?
It's changed very much. It's changed. My spirits have changed.
Okay, but your spirits have changed. But how much have you actually? You're applying Hume here. What has actually changed?
Well, I thought we were agreeing with Hume. So my emotions have changed because we're no longer ruled by any of those people. We're no longer ruled by someone who's richer than the king. We're no longer ruled by a woman whose only policy is to stare gormless into the fucking abyss while bankrupting the country. We're no longer ruled by a fucking clown, narcissistic clown who mutters in Latin so everybody thinks he's clever. That's got to be good, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've started to warm to Starmer a little bit.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I mean, I'm...
Well, I saw he played Power League.
He did what?
He plays it for five-a-side.
Oh, yeah, no, he does play football, doesn't he?
Yeah, so I've sort of, I've come round to him.
And that's what the fuck is going on. What about if Marine Le Pen turned out to be quite decent at tennis?
If Marine Le Pen was decent at jiu-jitsu, I would...
She looks like she should be.
I mean, wasn't her dad an actual Nazi?
Well, he, amongst his many charming comments was that the Holocaust was a mere detail of history.
All right, again, Hume could be applied. Like, you'd have to, but it's going to be a hard one to argue on his part that the Holocaust was a mere. I mean, if you were arguing in a philosophical sense that. What matters in the, you come at it from a complete, I guess, like Nietzsche-esque background that nothing truly matters, then yes. But I wouldn't describe it as a mere detail of history.
No, I
would describe it as that bit of history that we should all look back on and really, really remember the signs as we go into eco-fascism. Which we are like 20 years away from, because you think the migrant crisis is bad now. Wait till all of Bangladesh is underwater because we kept burning dead dinosaurs. that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, all right. So,
but also, that is a long time away. So who cares?
20 years.
That is 20 years. Ah,
maybe more than 20 years. I don't think anyone's suggesting it's 20 years that the whole of Bangladesh will be underwater. Oh, are you?
Yeah. Well, I'm throwing my.
Probably had a bet on it and doubled it with Phil Foden getting a yellow card against Holland.
Yeah. If Bellingham scores an assist and the whole of Bangladesh ends up underwater, I win £85. But yeah, it's good to bet on things that you don't want to happen, so you get some good out of it. Well, that's why I've added the Bangladesh thing in there, but.
Did you vote in the end?
Yes. Almost didn't.
Why? Because you forgot?
Because I had to go to Hemel Hempstead and to walk to the station, I'd have had to detour to go vote. And I did really consider I could just fuck it off. It doesn't really matter.
Well, I'm glad you voted.
And I went down
there. I went all the way to Brighton to bloody vote.
And then I voted. And it does feel, I do like voting. It does feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel so grown up. I just think it feels to me like the first time you're allowed to go out.
I live in the safest Labour seat that you can live in. So it's like, and I didn't vote for Labour, but yeah, I live in the like safest Labour seat. So I can, and I didn't vote fucking Tory before you all you fucking mad left wing fans of my dad. So I was going, because the minute you go, oh, I don't actually agree with some of the stuff that Labour does, and they're like, no, well, why don't you just, you might as well let the Nazis in with you. They're just fucking jarring idiots.
Do they talk like that? Some of them do. 95%
of them are fine, but there's a 5% fan base of yours. There's 5% of your fan base who they don't really like stand-up comedy. They just like Jeremy Corbyn and Jam. And the minute you're like, well, oh, I don't know, Corbyn could have done some things differently. They
don't like me, those people.
No, but some of them do still.
Right.
So you've got that as like part of your family. I think when you're a political comic like yourself, or have strayed into the political sphere, you can sometimes not be a comedian to people. You can be like someone who tells, like, they can see you as a truth teller when you just want to be a comedian.
I wonder if I should stand up for Parliament, given that there's five or six independent candidates who won.
You did that once.
I didn't stand for Parliament.
What did you stand for? You stood for something.
London Assembly or something.
What's that? I never
stood for Parliament.
Oh, right.
No. I wouldn't fancy that. Fuck that.
No.
I wouldn't stand for Parliament. Fuck that. If I ever did stand, I'd have to sort of then explain that, and I'd have to go, however, in the circumstances, I have been overwhelmed by the enormous number of people who have literally begged me to stand up in the current situation.
Well, no, but I'm not saying it's like enough people to get elected.
No.
I reckon, but it's enough people to be annoying on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you're not as enthusiastic as you might be then about the new government.
No, I am. I genuinely am. I like Angela Rayner. They put as deputy thing, and she's ginger and a woman, so she'll be good at it. So that's why I saw her dancing at Pride, and I quite like that. So I went,
finest moment. Yeah.
I was like, you seem like a laugh, and I don't know. There's something like. There's something about someone who's like ginger and a woman that you go like, yeah, you're going to be a bit no-nonsense, but in a fun way. This is all based on what people look like.
I love that these parties, they spend thousands and thousands of pounds a day on organising focus groups and writing manifestos and working out every bit of text and every bit of language so that they can convey exactly the right message that they feel can maybe win over the right number of people on issues such as immigration and transport and education and health, and working out what it is that is the most fundamental part of human life that people feel needs to be addressed most strongly, and how that they can convey their values at the same time as coming up with policies that fit those sentiments. And in the end, she seems like a laugh, ginger woman and all that.
That's the fault of the people. I liked that she was dancing at Pride. I thought that was good fun.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. All right. What are you doing in Edinburgh then, apart from checking on Locke's unlucky foot, even though it's said to be lucky?
My new Fringe show every night, 9:45 at the Other Belly. And also on the 28th of July, I'm filming a comedy special at Top Secret, my last show that got rave reviews and had people pass out during the show.
That's true, by the way.
Yeah, that is true. Pete was there. Our producer Pete was there for one of them, and someone thought that it was a setup. I had it 6 times it happened, and each time someone would be like, oh, that plant you have in. I was like, why would I plant that? That massive disruption to the show.
Someone fainted during the show. See, these days you'd have to stop the show and wait 20 minutes like they do at the football for all the paramedics to get there and stuff.
Yeah, and someone asks if they're vaccinated.
Elliot Steele, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you've liked it, rate it, and if you can be bothered, write a review. If you can't be bothered, then learn to be bothered. Stay up all night and think about your life choices. If there is anything at all that you think I should be finding out what the fuck is going on with it, please send me a message on Twitter at WTFisGoingOnPod, at WTFisGoingOnPod, and we will look at every message that you send. If you would like to become a WTF supporter for as little as £2 a month and get early access to ad-free and extended versions, please visit our Patreon page. What the fuck is going on was hosted by me, Mark Steele, with my guests Christine Beru and Elliot Steele. Voices by Sarah Alexander and Christine Beru. It was written by Mark Steele and Pete Sinclair. The music was by Willie Dowling. It was produced by Mike Benwell at Carousel Studios. What the fuck is going on was brought to you by WTF Productions.